The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Peter Boyles on News Talk 710, KNUS.
Made it to a Friday morning, everyone. The 11th of June. Thank you for being here. 2021, beautiful day. 83 will be the high. 88 tomorrow, Sunday 90. Coming up on the radio show, Alan Samuel about the shootout breast cancer. And then Mike Boyle, who we've worked together forever. And he came in and he had a movie that I appeared in. And he's coming on a radio show. We'll talk about it. In the meantime, he is back from a trek. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, one of the smartest guys I know, Rob Nadelson. The last time we spoke, you were off to see The Wizard. Where did you go? Where did you go on the vacation?
Montana. Where else?
meet me in Montana.
Yeah, it was a great trip. I drove both ways, and we had to go to the far end of the state because my family lives up way in northwest Montana. But one of the highlights, besides seeing the family, was actually, as I was telling your producer yesterday, broadcasting from Billings, Montana, to the entire state. It's a statewide radio show, basically the descendant of the show that I founded in the 1990s, and it was just wonderful to do that again.
What are the political scene in Montana? We hear stories of people fleeing California, and I talked to a friend of mine I grew up with who's in outside of Greenville, and he's talking about what's happening. New Yorkers are coming, and I've heard that in Montana and Wyoming and the Dakotas that all these people fleeing the craziness of the far left. Have you seen was there an impact of that in Montana, Rob?
Yes. Actually, it's been going on for some time. Right now, cities like Missoula and Whitefish are just exploding in size. Now, that having been said, Peter, the history is that when people move from other places to Montana, they tend to come during the summer and it's really beautiful. And they stay in the fall and it's really beautiful. Yeah. And then they hit the winter.
Yeah.
And after two winters, many of them give up and they turn back. It's not that the winters are terribly cold in western Montana, which is mostly where they go. It's that they're long and then they are dark. It's not a version of Denver where you see the sun a lot. It's more of a colder version of Oregon or Washington. And so that sends some people away. Now, Montanans, like many other people, worry that when you've got folks moving in from California, it's going to take the state and make it left wing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And that has certainly happened in some places in the country. The history in Montana is more ambiguous. For example, the far northwest part of the state where Kalispell and Glacier Park and Whitefish are located used to be Democratic territory. It was settled in the 80s, 70s and 80s by people from other states and became solidly Republican. And now it's very, very deeply conservative. So immigration from elsewhere doesn't always flip red to blue. Sometimes it has the other effect.
I covered the Freeman standoff. We went up and lived Garfield County,
yes.
Montana, Roundup, yes. And you know all those places. And the radio show was fun to do. All of it was fun, but the most important stuff were meeting the people, ranchers who lived there, and people telling you anecdotal thoughts. And I remember where there were two places. One was the Cattlemen's Club, and I forget the other one, but the diner closed at like 7 o'clock at night, but they opened at 4 a.m. and it was all about then. And the kids drove into town to go to school. It was really amazing. And I remember asking this guy,
there's a very interesting culture there, Peter, and it survives in parts of rural Colorado as well. There's the cafe where the local hotshots meet at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning to plan out what goes on in the community. There are, you saw the Freeman, and to remind people, it's a group of far right-wing extremists who hold themselves up in eastern Montana, rural eastern Montana. They had a compound there. And, in places like Montana, sometimes people kind of go off to their cabins in the winter, and they don't really have contacts with others, and they hatch up all these plans that sound real good when you're alone, and then they come back and try to implement them with various degrees of success. So there is a tendency to breed that kind of person, but for the most part, Montanans are wonderful people. I would say overwhelmingly wonderful people, and the ranchers in particular are some of the best.
Oh, great.
You know, ranching is a hard life, but it's a life that people pursue largely because of the values that they can live and that they can instill in their kids of hard work, reliance, self-reliance, family, and love of the outdoors. I remember being at one of these cocktail parties when I was at Oxford University, and some people there, English people, were making sneering comments to cowboys. And I looked them in the eye and I said, you know, I know cowboys, and they're some of the finest people I've ever met.
Sure.
You know, the response to that was sort of...
but that's the world view. Rob Nadelson with us. I just love when he comes on the radio show. When we were there for the standoff, and I said, you got to know some of the locals, and you'd say hi to people. And I said to this one guy, I said, what's the hardest thing about living up here? And the guy said, finding somebody you're not related to get married.
True story. Well, I don't know if that's quite the truth, but...
But it was a fun line.
It's true that it's like Wyoming in that it's a huge, small town.
Yes.
You know, everybody knows.
And they did.
Everybody knows everybody else.
They had running gags, and they were funny, and they welcomed the FBI, and this was, of course... after what had happened in Ruby Ridge, and it was a really interesting, politically charged week of programming. And then comes the great sadness is what happened in Oklahoma City. But as always in history, the river runs through it. And it ran through that, ran through the Freeman. And,
yep.
And it was a charged time. And we'll knock it off. But in the end of Friday morning, we'd been there, I don't know, I forget how many days, and they had all the satellite trucks and all the network trucks, and they were parked a little small, really, Montana town. And we had come out, and we were doing the radio show in the district attorney's office, and came outside, and all the trucks were fired up, and people were scrambling, and they had caught the Unabomber. Theodore Kaczynski.
Yeah, another example of a guy who holds up in a cabin for the winter.
And yeah, absolutely.
But they
had captured him, and they were taken off to cover the Kaczynski, the Unabomber. And, Montana's wonderful. I mean, it's just a great place.
You know, it really is instructive when you compare Colorado and Montana. And I've actually written articles on this subject. They both had similar origins. They're similar states in terms of natural resources and the mountains and so forth. However, they developed in different cultural directions, and they followed very different policies. So when I lived in Colorado in the 70s and 80s and listened at that time on the radio to the great Peter Boyles, Colorado was a pretty libertarian state, and Montana, on the other hand, while socially conservative, was quite collectivist in many ways, big spending, big government state. And those positions have virtually reversed in the intervening years. I mean, Montana has turned deep red, although I hate using that color to describe Republicanism, strong Republican majorities in both houses, a Republican governor who raised money for my gubernatorial campaign to indicate how conservative the guy is. And their legislature now is vigorously pursuing conservative reforms in the same way that our Colorado progressive legislature is pursuing progressive destruction. It used to be when I would leave Montana and come to Colorado, I breathed freer air, but now it's quite the opposite.
Absolutely. Rob Nadelson's with us. He's brilliant. I love him when he comes on the show. I was talking about, and you're as an incredible constitutional attorney, and this started, I read this last night about this woman columnist, and she's in the UK, and she wrote a, I think, a very British biting parody on the Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's baby, and she writes that the baby should have been named. They missed a major opportunity. They should have named the baby Georgina Floydina. And then going on that the baby, she calls the baby an it because it's non-binary, and goes on to conclude the baby's first words will be free Palestine. To me, that stuff's brilliant, right? She lost her gig. Yeah. She got fired for it. And almost daily in the trades and on the internet, they're called the trade journals of the radio business, television business. People are losing their jobs, First Amendment attacks. And I watch this stuff, and I think to myself, you know, how doomed this must be. And you and I've had this discussion, you know, name another nation state, another community, another country that removes statues, tears down the past, removes books, does all these things, silences voices, and it came out in a good place because it doesn't. So
no.
How doomed are we? I mean, doomed, my choice of words, but where's this headed?
Well, I don't know where it's headed, but I certainly don't like the current trajectory. It's very disturbing. I mean, one of the things that your producer suggested that we talk about is critical race theory.
Same thing.
And right, exactly. And one of the things I did is I pulled up a book by Richard Delgado, who is one of the founders of critical race theory. And before I mention it, before I read from it, let me just say that when I was an academic, when I was a law professor, early in my career, I would go to these law professor conferences. We're talking early 90s here. And the critical race theorists were mostly young people who didn't know squat. They'd never done any empirical research. They were just basically indoctrinated leftists who thought this was be a nice thing to make their career. And they would tend to dominate the panels. And we consider them somewhat of a joke. I mean, not just conservatives like me, but the dominant liberal group among law professors. It was a joke because these people really had no intellectual heft or empirical heft behind them. And so to see that this thing is now invading our institutions, I mean, it's grotesque. It's sort of like, comic strip theory invading the institutions.
But it's belief.
Let's see if I can find this particular section here. Oh, yeah. Critical race theory, this is Delgado, one of their gurus, talking. Critical race theory questions the very foundations of a liberal order. Now, he's using the word liberal in the very broad sense tolerant thought, limited government, and so forth. It questions the very foundations of the liberal order, including equality theory, mm-hmm. legal reasoning, enlightenment rationalism, and neutral principles of constitutional law. Mm-hmm. Now, our country was founded on enlightenment rationalism. It was founded on the idea that all men are created equal. It was based heavily upon the idea that there would be neutral legal reasoning in interpreting the Constitution. So what he is saying here is that critical race theory rejects all of that.
Absolutely.
It rejects the very foundations of the republic.
Absolutely.
This is not something, this is not something where we share common assumptions and we can argue about the applications. This is a very deep, dark, irrational way of looking at things. It bears closer relationships to Nazism or to communism than to anything America has traditionally stood for.
Our guest is the one and only Rob Nadelson. You and I have talked about this forever, that social justice or progressive justice or whatever it's called, it really is, it's social Marxism. And I begin to read this, and it divides people into oppressed and oppressor groups, which is, Karl Marx's dialectic. Having said that, where it is headed, and Lenin, when he's in exile in Switzerland, writes a pamphlet entitled Death to Liberalism. And it's really worth the read because what Lenin says is, give me an anarchist or give me a, you know, a monarchist. At least they know what they want. He said, liberals have, no, I'm serious. I'm a big Lenin reader. Lenin said, these people have no clue. They don't know what they want. And he said, give me this guy or give me this guy for the sheer reason they know what they want. Liberals don't. And so now the liberals who have, it's what you pointed out, Robbie, is absolutely on the money. So now here comes critical race. And watching these school boards and superintendents and these principals and teachers all going in for the count. And what it suggests is, and I've been a couple of days reading it, I'm not prepared to be a, you know, big on-air about it, but you tie it into the 1619 Project, which did the same thing to history, and you end up in a place where things don't work well. And I brought this in, I've been hanging around with me, I talked to a good friend of mine yesterday, the Journal of American Psychiatric Association. I don't know if you saw this piece, that whiteness itself is a mental condition that leads white people to hate and terrorize. On his article on having whiteness, a psychoanalyst by the name of Donald Moss, this was published, describing whiteness as a malignant parasitic condition that is not yet, and there's no permanent cure. And I said, substitute whiteness for Jews, make this Europe 1932. See it again?
Right.
I see it again.
Yeah. One of the things that Lenin doesn't understand is that, or at least professes not to understand, is that liberalism, again using the word very broadly to mean the kinds of principles upon which the country was founded, liberalism is not it's not really a set of ends. I mean, Lenin and the critical race theory people think in terms of ends, that is to say their power.
Absolutely.
Liberalism speaks in terms of procedural rules by which, through mutual respect and fair proceedings, individuals and societies can pursue their own ends.
Oh, yeah.
So, for example, a liberal value is freedom of speech. A liberal value is property rights. Liberals understand they want those things, and they don't have some centralized vision for what everybody has to do with this property or what everybody has to do with this freedom of speech. The liberalism simply provides the groundwork, the fairness, the rules. Now, the people we're talking about here don't care about fairness.
Bingo.
I mean, anyone who writes that whiteness is a disease or that whites are inherently inferior doesn't care about fairness. That person is setting forth a narrative that he can use to try to, you know, like using a sulfuric acid to dissolve society so that he can pick up the pieces.
But that's the point of it.
Pick up what's left.
And that's precisely
the point.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
Yeah, and Lenin.
And that's something which I've noticed that talk show hosts begin to emphasize, but it cannot be emphasized too much. The people we're dealing with now are not your daddy's liberals, right? The people we're dealing with now are people who have entirely different premises, and they have one lodestone, and that lodestone is power. Power for themselves and people like them. And they don't give a damn about anybody else. And so there's no real compromising with these people. They've got to be removed from positions of power. They've got to be marginalized, and they've got to be discredited. And that's the only way we can survive as a society. Traditional methods of polite disagreement aren't going to work with them.
Well, Lenin said that. Lenin goes on to say in other works, the end will justify the means. And then precisely, but he does this other great work entitled The State and Revolution. And what Lenin says, well, oh, yeah, it will happen. But in the meantime, we need the vanguard party. We need a group. And that was, of course, him, Stalin and others. They're going to make all the decisions. They're going to do these things. And the time comes, when the time comes for Marx's utopia, we will turn it over. In the meantime, there has to be the iron hand, and there cannot be any dissent. We will control culture. We will control voice. We will control, you know, all things. We will control the economy,
yes.
You know, blocking off roads so the kulaks will die, you know. And you know, that's we will get there. We will get to a collective farm. But first, we have to kill these people. But it's okay because in the end, it'll be okay. And so when I watch stuff like this, and I'm thinking to myself, they're hardly Leninist, although I doubt if they even know what Leninism is. But, you know, I told you that great moment when we were embedded, quote unquote, for the Democratic National Convention. And there was this tent in Civic Center Park, and it said, Anarchist Collective. Did I ever tell you that story, Robbie? And it said...
No, you haven't told me that story.
Anarchist Collective. And I wander over there with Shannon Scott and...
Oh, that's right. You said it was inherently contradictory.
I said, you can't be this, you know? What do you mean? I said, so you guys are Buchananists. And the guy looks at me like I just said, you guys are Martians, you know? I mean, it was like... But they were the Anarchist Collective. And I went, you can't be. You can't exist. And then they got huffy.
Obviously, all this is closely related to the cancel culture.
Exactly.
And as a historian, and you would appreciate this, I asked myself, is there a time in American history where we had something similar to the cancel culture? And one popped out at me, and I did some ancillary research, and actually it fits. You may recall that in 1835, the abolitionists decided to initiate a national campaign to put abolition on people's radar, right? And so what they did is they sent out literature, newspapers, pamphlets, brochures all around the country attacking slavery. Well, when this came into the South, the Southern slaves
shut it down. They shut it down.
Yes, right. So what did they do? They went to the social medium of the day, which was the post office. That was the social medium in the 1900s, in the 1800s, and they said, "We want you to cancel this stuff. We want you to stop distributing abolitionist literature." And they were successful. Mm-hmm. They shut down all discussion of the merits of slavery in the South between 1835 and 1860. They also had riots where they beat up abolitionists and others, calling them, quote, insurrectionists and incendiaries. They destroyed literature, burned it in big public bonfires, and saying to myself, boy, this whole looks a whole lot like the cancel culture. It is the cancel culture.
Hang on.
We don't want anybody knowing anything about the arguments against slavery, so we'll shut them down.
Here we go. We're going to take a turn around, come back. Rob Nadelson's with us. 710 KNUS 83 will be the high today. In time to save yourself some big dough every month. It really isn't difficult to make it happen. You've got to do the refi with the mortgage. I did it. And do it now before the rates get any higher. I've been talking about this a lot lately, only because it's important for you to know the rates we're seeing really can make significant differences in your budget. Making now the time, please lock it in today. Start it up. You can save hundreds a month. You tighten up the amount of time you pay, tens of thousands, long-term savings for real. And they do the work. No obligation, no upfront, no hidden fees. It really is a simple conversation around your needs. American Financing, 303-695-7000, 303-695-7000. They are there. Call them online, AmericanFinancing.net. Look at them online, AmericanFinancing.net. NMLS 182334, regulated by the Division of Real Estate. You have waited long enough. 83 will be the high today, 88 tomorrow, and Sunday, 90. Coming up, Alan Samuel for a quick drop on Shootout Breast Cancer. Then the one and the only Mikey Boyles in studio. Rob Nadelson, we want him to come in the studio. He hasn't been allowed in here because of the COVID. Next time, we already told him he could come in. Rob Nadelson's with us. We were talking about cancel culture and defending the First Amendment. And then I opened this up as a talk radio, no man, its master. Who could not work anymore in comedy? And the list is really, really lengthy. I mean, certainly Richard Pryor, you know, Red Fox comes up, you know, all the legends, Sam Kennison, there's a lengthy group of people. And then the one that was funny to me was someone said Joan Rivers. Well, I'm a young boy disc jockey working with my mentor, Bob Lee. Joan Rivers had a movie out called Rabbit Test, winky winky, about a man who gets pregnant. And she sat in the studio with us. She was a delight. I loved her to death and everything. I can never happen. Now we have the birthing person, Rob. I'm serious. It's that eureka moment when the light goes on. It's, wait a minute, that's when I met Joan Rivers. Rabbit Test about a pregnant man. Ah, that can't happen. So, and who could not work today? Who do you think could not work? Rickles obviously comes to mind. Who could not work?
Well, I don't know about that, but I would like to pick up on something. One of the comments made by a fellow columnist of mine in the Epoch Times was that you can't write satire anymore.
Oh.
Because events outrun the satire. I remember when people used to joke about homosexual marriage. I mean, it was really ridiculous. It was unprecedented in American in world history, and suddenly it became a reality.
I don't know in world history, but certainly in this country,
in world history.
Really, the Greek warriors and all of those stories were
the upper class Athenians had homosexual relationships, but it was not marriage.
But I thought the Spartans and I thought the Greek.
Not marriage.
All right, fair enough.
There was an idealization in certain Greek cultures of the older man who took the younger budding boy under his aegis, so to speak.
Okay.
And they would have a sexual relationship, but the older man would also serve as a mentor, as a tutor to the boy. But we're not talking about marriage. In fact, the emperor that the Romans themselves and historians generally have considered their very worst was Elagabalus, who reigned, as I recall, from 218 to 222, I think. And what the historians and both modern and ancient cite most often as an example of his awfulness was that he went through a marriage ceremony with another man. So that gives you the idea of where the ancients were coming from. Hmm. So, I mean, we used to satire that, then that became a reality. Now we satired other things, and they became realities. And reality is outrunning satire. And so you really can't write satire anymore because it'll last about 2 minutes before it becomes true.
What do you do with Orwell now? And by the way, Orwell was being removed from public libraries in Britain.
Right. Now, that's a good example of somebody who would be canceled today. Right.
And why? Because Orwell is real right now.
Well, yeah, he's real, and he portrays what we are now going through in a negative light, so he's got to be canceled, right?
Just like
the Southern slaveholders.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I'm not overstating it when I say that certain aspects of the left-wing mindset are very similar to that of the slaveholder. The idea of commandeering somebody's labor and giving it to someone else who didn't earn it. The whole concept of we have a right to health care, which is essentially a way of saying we have a right to force other people to give us what we want. It's very much of a slave mentality, and so it's not that surprising that there would be a parallel between the suppression of anti-slavery ideas in the South and the suppression of anti-woke ideas in the United States now.
But again, I mean, some of that stuff enters through the Fabians. Some of it enters in the union movement, that men who started the unions in this country, and they did things like, you know, the safety factors and retirement plans and conditioning and health care. Because those were the battles. And it's interesting when you compare the Kaiser's Germany to Woodrow Wilson, and the Kaiser comes out a lot better on kindergartens, public schools. Woodrow Wilson replaces children in factories, child labor. But of course, we were going to make the world safe for democracy by taking on the Kaiser. But if you were a Jewish guy, you were better off under the Kaiser in Berlin than you would have been in New York City. The kindergarten concept, the elementary school stuff, that was the Kaiser. And I'm always loving when people compare and contrast moments in history. So I don't know. It's like I watch this stuff and the insanity of what we're doing now. When you take Orwell out of the libraries, and as an Orwell fan, I think, I don't know if I've read everything Orwell wrote, but I've read a lot of it. You know, you notice, Rob, Orwell never ends in a good place. Ever. Not once.
Right.
Ever. I mean, so you can't allow him to be read? Why does Orwell right. scare these
people?
You
can't allow him to be read. You can't allow Mark Twain to be read, right? But it's very selective. I mean, consider the N-word, for example. Think of all the people who have been canceled for the use of the N-word. Well, Hunter Biden apparently used it repeatedly.
He's not allowed. He's right? okay. He's all right.
He's okay. Yeah, he's fine. Sure. He's not canceled.
But remember.
It's not even mentioned in the mainstream media. That's why I'm saying I don't think a lot of this stuff is particularly sincere. And I think that the hopes of the moment are there to serve the needs of the elite that is seeking additional power. And the people and Orwell mentions this too. Remember in 1984, Oceania, which is where the hero sure. Winston Smith lives, Oceania was at war with Eurasia.
Yep.
Oceania had always been at war
until.
With Eurasia, right? And until later on in the book, Oceania is at war with East Asia. Oceania had always been at war with East Asia. Eurasia had always been the friend mm-hmm. of Oceania. I mean, you switch the history around, you turn on a dime, mm-hmm. Or perhaps I should say turn on a ruble, mm-hmm. for to accomplish what the purpose is. So I wouldn't take the substance of what they say, you know, like attacking people who use the N-word too seriously. Just keep in mind what the goal is and marginalize them accordingly.
But that's the point. I mean, it's Lenin's point, it's Hitler's point, it's Mao's point, it's the Kim's point. I'm reading this. There's so many great things right now. I'm reading a book called 1929, and I'm finishing this guy who did this new work on the Kennedys. And he said the 1930s, this is a great line that's been rolling into my head, was the decade of isms. I thought, this is brilliant. Fascism, communism, Nazism.
Yes,
It is the decade of isms. And they make this case, and but the actions of all three of the isms are identical. And to tie into that, you know, the God, King, the Emperor, Hirohito. And they all dance the same dance, Rob. They all say the same thing.
They're part of a larger ism. They're part of a larger ism called totalitarianism.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And
one of the things that I've noticed in history is that you can have a very good century, but the bad ideas in that century tend to infect the next one.
Sure.
The 19th century was an unprecedented time of progress for virtually everybody. I mean, that's when we emancipated women, liberated the slaves, created modern medicine, built the modern economy. But you had a group of dissidents in the 19th century, people like Karl Marx, who came up with this ism that then bore its poison fruit in the 20th century. And the 18th century Enlightenment was the ism that informed the progress of the 19th century. I sometimes wonder what ism is being founded now and what it means
for our
children's future. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, in this postmodern age, but I look at some, I mean, I think some of these things, if you didn't see what was coming, then you're going to catch it. No one had it coming more than the Romanovs for what the Romanovs were doing or allowing to happen.
Right, we're talking, of course, about the Russian imperial family.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, but then comes, and I'm steeped in this guy's book on 100 years of Russian history, and he makes the case. He said, you know, they couldn't see it, and then the Mensheviks couldn't see it. And he has this great line. He said, the Bolsheviks didn't seize power. They picked it up in the street. I thought, oh, my God, is that smart. Isn't that a great line?
That's very good.
Oh, I thought, because the Mensheviks and the Romanovs, they just screwed it up so badly. And then Lenin arrives and end of story. But he said, they didn't seize power. He said, they literally picked it up in the street. I thought, wow. And so what are we watching
that,
happen?
That happens. Yeah, that happens when you have a disorganized society, a lot of leadership.
Because
another great example. I once asked a pair of French revolutionary historians I know, how could Napoleon Bonaparte, this outsider from Corsica, become dictator of a country like France at the age of 29?
I was a kid. Yes.
And the answer was, you know, they killed everybody else.
Everybody else is gone. Yeah.
There was a huge power vacuum that Bonaparte picked up power in the streets. That's a great way of putting it.
And then here's my last question. And Rob's with us, and next time, come into studio. Rob Nadelson's with us. Is that what the progressive left in the streets, because we've always talked about the left belonging, streets belong to the left, are they trying to pick the power up in the streets as we speak?
I think they're trying to create enough chaos that enables them to seize power,
so do I.
Or either democratically or not democratically. I mean, there's no other way of interpreting it
there's
than that.
No.
And by the way, I look forward to being in studio. For those in the audience who wonder why we should care, in-studio interviews go much better. They're very, very interesting.
And
a certain dynamic. So don't miss it. It's going to be on June 29th.
Is that when you're coming back?
June 29th, 8 o'clock. Rob Nadelson takes on Peter Boyle.
No one takes me on. I just kind of roll over. But it's interesting. I tell everybody, I said, when the last day comes, the off-air conversations become on-air, and the on-airs become off-air. And then we both head for the elevator together.
Yeah, right.
Take care.
Right.
Thanks, boss. Thanks. Rob Nadelson, everybody.
Great.
Thank you, sir.
You.
All right. Well, Brian Gray's coming up. And then in the studio, we're going to Alan Samuel and Mikey Boyle. And you need a professional appraisal, all those valuables tucked away in your basement, sitting on a fortune in cash. You need money right now, summer vacation time, whatever it is. David Ellison Cherry Creek pays top dollar for your diamonds, your gold, sterling silver, wedding bands, and Rolex watches. Instant cash on the spot. David Ellis has been buying precious metals, antiques, in Colorado for decades. He's my guy. David offers confidential evaluations on estate sale jewelry, precious metals, coins, silver sets, antique items, no obligation, free appraisals, private and confidential. If you're looking to buy a gift for somebody special, it's David Ellis. Best prices in diamonds and jewelry, a beautiful newly remodeled expanded showroom, the black awnings on the building now, on the remodel, 3rd and Clayton and Cherry Creek North. DavidEllisJewelry.com, 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 303-322-8779, 303-322-8779. Goes 6 days a week, and he's there. David Ellis Jewelry, Cherry Creek.
U.S.
83 will be the high today, 88 tomorrow, and Sunday, 90, maybe a little bit of rain, 92 on Monday. Coming up, Alan Samuel will talk about shoot-off breast cancer, and then the one, the only, Mikey Boyle's here. Brian Gray from Alpine, he's become, not only was always a great sponsor, but not just a great friend and a mentor. All right, my boy, what do we got?
Well, 83 degrees, we better break out the jackets after the past couple days, but we got all green numbers all the way across the board, Pete. We got the Dow up 78 points, NASDAQ's up almost 22, and the S&P's up about 6.44. The S&P 500 hit another record yesterday despite higher-than-expected inflation data. The S&P ended up for the day. It closed at 4,239. The last record that it sent was all the way back to May 7th. Now, the data showed inflation rising at its fastest pace since 2008, and that was after the economy was recovering from the recession, so we're starting to hear that more and more. The reaction to the bond market has been shoved basically off to the side. The 10-year yield fell to 1.44% after trading above 1.77% earlier in the year. So as we take a look at these green numbers right now, we're looking at this sawtooth market. Pete, it's a good time to double-check your portfolio, make sure you got everything in line. If you want to get that second opinion, by all means, give Alpine Planning Group a call. We'd love to sit down and talk with you.
Call the man, 303-843-0918, 843-0918. They are my guys. Investing is a matter of trust, and they're the best. Have a great weekend. We'll do this on Monday. Talk to you, my boy. Thanks.
All right, Pete. See ya.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
You can sneak a call in because we've had a guest, 303-696-1971. Once again, with Jimmy coming on the show, he's got Stefan's show this afternoon. I'm sure he'll get with this. But it is interesting, the whole Tay Anderson fiasco. And the other morning, we discovered that the Denver Teachers Union knew. They knew about the allegations against Tay Anderson over 2 years ago. Now we know this, that I know, they know. And I'll read you the headline. Findings in Tay Anderson investigation will be released by the end of summer, DPS board says. Now, you caught them flat-footed yesterday, knowing now that they knew. Now, today, they're going to tell you, oh, wow, well, at the end of summer, no chance. They already know, and they're playing for time, and they're working you over. We're waiting for Billy to clean up some calls here, and we'll jump into a phone. And then Mikey Boyle in studio and Alan Samuel showing up. Ah, we go to James. Okay. 1, 2, put him on hold. We'll throw him up on the air. Billy, there's a whole two shows that go on, and Billy runs. All right. Hey, James, there you go, man. You're on the show. Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning, Peter. I was in the Denver and Decay documentary, and the day of when we started to do it, Stefan said that Tay Anderson had bowed out. And I didn't really think of it at the time, but now it seems like a day or two or that same day, he faked that injury with the police falling down.
Video's hilarious.
You know, getting – right. So he knew all along that the school board –
sure.
Had him under investigation.
Sure.
So if he was to put himself out in Denver and Decay, and it, you know, preaching about how bad it is, then they would. I mean, you can see why he bowed out. It's simple.
Well, of course. I mean, once again, he's a grifter. He's running a grift, and there's a difference between a con and a grift, and the long con, the short con, and the grift. The Clintons were grifters. I really believe that. Bill and Hillary Clinton were grifters. They grifted the country. Cons are different, long cons and short cons. So he's running a grift, and he never thought he would get caught, which is an arrogance and I think somewhat stupid. But now, this morning, yesterday when we know that they knew, during that time period they knew, and now this morning, if you believe this, I got a bridge in Brooklyn. They knew about him for 2 years, and now they're going to release the investigation at the end of the summer. Just on face value,
sure.
Jim, do you believe that?
No. I think they're going to try to cover it up as much as they can.
I'll clean it up, yeah.
And if Polis had any goodness in him, he would bring him in and say, you need to resign, dude.
But
you need to get out.
But they won't make the call. The point is not one, this is, again, golden opportunity for the Democratic Party. It's going to be for the Republican Party taking on the Democrats. Not one principal, and I mean that in terms of their statute, not one principal Democrat has said anything.
Go ahead.
You say, go ahead.
We all know why they're too scared to say anything about it. And it's because of the color of his skin.
Well, there's all kinds of things.
Everybody knows it.
But there's also the at-risk part of this. They all knew.
Yeah, and they're all guilty.
Precisely.
If they knew, they're just as bad as him.
Remember what they said about Richard Nixon. It was the cover-up.
Yep, the lie is, yeah, exactly.
The lie's one
and
thing.
And you know that. Yeah. The when you talk about recovery, I'm going on 13 years
all
clean
right.
and sober.
Cool.
And, you know, I offered my advice to Polis and Hancock, and not one word. I mean, there's 15 drug programs out there.
Listen,
it'll take people in. It's a joke.
Of course it is. As in the words of Bob Cote and now with Paul Scudo and everybody, not one time has an elected official or a bureaucrat darkened their door at step. They don't want to hear what they got because the answer is clear.
Quick thing here. Yesterday I'm working downtown, and I'm in the concrete business. This homeless guy came at me with a knife, right?
Ooh.
I'm as God honest serious about this as I told him to get out of our work area, and he came at me with a knife.
Yeah.
We called the cops, and they said, yeah, we'll be there.
Yeah.
Never showed up.
Love your call. Thanks.
And I don't blame him.
All right, everybody.
Bye.
No, why not? Alan Samuel out of the box, and then the one and only Mikey Boyle. 83 will be the high. It's going to get good. 88 tomorrow. This is 710 KNUS. Hold on.